It's time for The Buzz on KFAR Radio. A look at the growing marijuana industry in Alaska. Brought to you by the Tanana Herb Company. And now, The Buzz.
Hey, welcome everybody to The Buzz on 97.5 FM, 660 AM and live at KFARradio.com. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Hatchie, sitting next to me, this fine strapping young gentleman, business partner and co-host. Sam Hatchie.
You had to remember my name. He's like, I love it. Thank you so much, brother. What a great introduction, as always. We have a really fun guest in our studio today. A man's man, a true Alaskan, a guy that adventures where others, wouldn't go because, like, I don't know. Laurel Eklund, let's tell us. Why you go to the strangest places that nobody else wants to go to?
Jump in, right?
Well, I guess the biggest answer to that question is I got nothing else better to do, so you know, might as well go do something. You got to do something with your time. I just enjoy it. You know, Alaska has a lot of area to explore. Mm-hmm. You can do one thing. I'm a dog musher and guide. And you can do that for all your life, have so much adventures, but yet barely scratch the surface what the state got to offer, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So you are you ran the Iditarod this last year.
Yep.
Let's give our listening audience a little bit. Where are you from? Where you grew up?
I'm from Alaska. I grew up a little bit all over this the state. You know, I spent some time up in Nome as a little kid. On the Yukon River with my dad. My folks were divorced, so, you know, I spent some time in Fairbanks and Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, got in the dogs when I was 18 and decided to move back to Fairbanks.
Nice. Nice. So what got you into dogs in the first place then?
Well, I've always wanted sled dogs. I'm the youngest of my dad's sons, so... and they all grew up around the sled dogs, him having dogs forever. He had me late in life, but he decided to get out of the dogs before that to go do something else. And so with that, I've heard his stories and growing up in Alaska, you know, seeing Iditarod start, Quest start, being around people that had their own sled dogs, you know, maybe really and then really want to get into it. So I bought my first dog from Lester Earhart from the village of Tanana on Yukon River for $600 and 3 cords of firewood.
Jeez.
So that's equivalent to that price is back then, you know, $1,600, $1,500. You had everything.
Dogs aren't cheap, huh?
Oh no.
Nope, I've spent a lot more money since then. But yeah, and then you know, I worked on it. I did a rod. Yeah, this is my first rookie run. I've raced for at least done a race every season since I've been in dogs the past 10 years. Last few years, folks, hard and racing a lot harder because you know I've kind of been all over the place with sled dogs, so. You know, with that being said, you know, my main focus now is I did a rod for a few years while still doing the other stuff I love doing with dogs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're geared mostly for like long distance competitions and things like that.
Yep. I'd be considered in the mushroom world a long distance racer. And my style of Alaskan Huskies, I gear them towards that breeding of a long distance dog.
Okay. Mm. How many, so when you ran the Iditarod this year, how many dogs did you start with in your team?
I started with the Max 16. Okay. They had 14 for a while, but they moved back up to 16, which was awesome. You know, I dropped a handful of dogs for minor stuff, and they're back home all peeled up, ready to rumble. It was great. Cause if I had 14, I'd be down to, I finished with 11. I've been down to, you know, 9. I dropped 5 dogs. So, as a bigger guy, I would have had to really work on my, in the back of the sled, which I already do. But yeah.
Running up all the hills.
Yep. That's one thing my dad, he ran the Iditarod in 81 and 83. And one thing he told me is you're going to run up every single hill from Anchorage to Nome. So be ready for that.
Was he right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we did. We worked a lot back that sled.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we did. We just helped out with the short sprint race that happened at the Dog Mushers Hall. Yeah. And even on flat tracks, those guys were running.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Like some of them were kicking. Some of them were just straight running behind the sled. You know, it's a lot of work. It looks easy, but it ain't.
No, even this like doing some bush stuff with the dogs, you know, it's a ton of work. Sometimes you're helping them up the hill. And a lot of times you have no trail, so you're just walking and pushing the sled, you know, through deep snow. And imagine. Luckily, you know, we try to avoid areas that you need a mountain sled to get on, because I don't feel like doing that in chest deep snow.
Dogs do either. Yeah, what's like the. Have you ever gotten into a spot with your dogs and realized that they start leaping and bounding through the powder and you have just made the biggest mistake?
No, trained professional here. Yeah, no, don't get it. Oh, I would say, Cole, that like stickier situations. I have snowshoed in front of a dog team, especially when I used to live in Coldfoot and on the Yukon River, you know, had to use snowshoes, put trails in, then own a snow machine, or use dogs. And it's great training for the dogs, actually. It puts a lot of confidence. You can't do that all the time, especially if you want to race, because that does slow down your team. You know, they're pretty much lifting weights instead of running laps on the track, you know, so that's the equivalent of their working out there. But I guess, you know, I've been in some areas where, the dogs are neck deep in snow, and I pull the snowshoes out, and that's no fun because, man, that's a lot of work. I don't like snowshoeing for fun.
That's funny. So you had mentioned you breed huskies as part of your hybrid mix. Tell us a little bit about that. The size of your average dog. Are they, when I envision a husky, I mean, am I looking at a 70, 80-pound dog? Is it a smaller husky dog? Because everybody's so particular and personal, I think, with their breeds, especially geared towards the type of racing you're doing.
Yeah, so even in the distance world, there's guys that breed in some sprint mix. So, you know, a little bit of the dog itself is really not really a hybrid. It's its own style of dog. It's a purpose-bred dog. It's known as the Alaskan Husky. They've been around for a while now. They actually came from the old village dogs, and back in those days they didn't really have a name for those dogs. It's, you know, it was just a dog. Mm-hmm. And then really started seeing what we have now is the Alaskan Husky back in the old Gold Rush days and stuff. But long story short, there's four variations to that breed. You have sprint, you have mid distance, long distance, you have freight. Freight's the only style not used for that. Mm-hmm. Freight dogs usually range in between 70 to 80 pounds. Jeez. While I do have some of my distance, and then my style dogs, long distance dogs, you know, generally they have a various weight depending on the musher, style, bloodline. But for me personally, my dogs are between anywhere from 60 to 72 pounds, with some of my females ranging in from 45 pounds all the way up to 60 pounds.
Oh, jeez.
I like that style of dog. It's a little bigger than some guys do. I'm a bigger guy, but also I've always looked on who I want to breed to dog-wise fit my style of mushing. And that's what, for anybody getting into dogs, I'd say work for a couple kennels, but then figure out what you want to do with your dogs, because you want this to, you can pick some awesome dogs from all over the place, but sometimes those bloodlines might not fit your style of mushing. Mm. And that's the biggest thing. If you're gonna be a rec musher all the way up to being a professional sled dog racer or a guide with dogs, you gotta breed towards the style of dogs and style of adventures you want to do as a musher.
Just a reminder, you're listening to The Buzz on 97.5 FM, 660 AM and live at KFARradio.com.
Well, that's some great advice. You know, just people that want a dog or two on a ski jerk, because like you said, you use tons of dogs all over the place. It's kind of a tool, more or less, you know, for what you want to get accomplished there.
Don't tell them that, though.
I know. Well, I mean, they're little little balls of fluff and love.
Yeah. I like to, instead of a tool or a pet or a working animal, I like to say they're our adventure buddies, you know.
Yeah. I like that.
Oh,
yeah.
They're still, you know, pet-like. I bring my guys inside to hang out, mm-hmm. you know, go on walks with them. I mean, that's, at the end of the day, I look at a trained professional dog. You should be able to let it loose. You should be able to have some recall. Sometimes, you know, they're being boneheads. They're gonna be your classic husky, but they're not gonna like take off and go
never come
10
back.
Miles down the neighborhood. You know, they're gonna wag their tail, and you're calling them, you know, they're 100 feet that way, and they're wagging their tail. They know their name, but that's where they're wagging their tail, but they're gonna do their thing for a minute, then come back to you. But yeah,
dude, we babysat a husky, a straight up husky with the two color eyes, you know.
Yeah.
You can't take that thing off a leash. He just flies and
walks really well on a leash. You got a 50-foot of rope you can have him walking around. He doesn't pull you or nothing. But it's like this false sense of security. You know, you're going to take that leash off, and then he's going to be like, ooh, something shiny.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, you go on, even on group walks with a train team used to that, man. The Huskies, some of them got that prey drive. And one, especially on the group, it's group think. One says, oh, there's a bear or a moose. Let's go bark at it. Everybody goes and bark at it. Then you got the one or two that look back at you like, oh, really, I do that, boss? And then they come, they stay back. And then now you're chasing those guys, and it can be a cluster. But that's the fun of – that's the thing with dogs. They're, you know, they're not machines. They're their own species.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So do you have a favorite dog?
Well, yeah, you know,
they're not listening, so you can tell, be serious.
Tell us.
Yeah. You know, I got a lot of great dogs. And I do got my I got my favorites that come inside. A lot of my old timers, and especially from my very first litter. You know, I had those guys that were, those guys were born underneath my bunk in my little trapping cabin we stayed in when I was when I was 18 for my first dog Annie. And, you know, a couple of those guys are always, you know, kind of always around and loose the most. Yeah. Lolo, he used to be my first leader ever trained. And now he's retired, but I always joke around, he's sad and fat. And he eats everything. He loses weight in the summertime. And I don't think I've ever fed that dog in 3 years now. It sounds terrible, but if you see how fat he is, he takes care of himself. He's pretty smart. Yeah. I think one of my buddies that went to watch my kennel, helped watch my kennel when I was gone for Iditarod stuff before my partner came back for ceremonial stuff that week. He said he came over and he saw Lolo and another dog, KJ, his buddy, that like they get in trouble. I think Lolo's the instigator. KJ just follows orders. Lolo had a frozen pizza in his mouth. And he knows it opened my door and stuff. He's a real smart dog. So, and they're just like halfway across the kennel with it. So, you know, yeah, Lolo, he's one of the favorites. And then, of course, Esther, she's and Frodo, they're my best leading pair. They're retired now, hanging out. And the new guys I have, you know, Boromir, he's one of my main guy. He's from a split breeding, and my buddy, he's a really big Lord of the Rings fan. So
yeah, I'm hearing these Lord of the Rings names, I'm just kind of laughing.
Yeah. Well, Frodo, yeah, it's Lord of the Rings, but he's named after, and he kept to his namesake, who's named after my dad's very best leader, who you can put that dog up front and great command leader, so you can go off trail and stuff. That dog, Frodo, you know, same thing like my dad's Frodo. And you can always drive, put him up front. You can drive that team like a snow machine. You just go anywhere, deep powder, off trail, on a good trail. And he's one. I got some good dogs there like that, but he was one of those once in lifetime leaders. Sadly, back then when I was first working with him, or when he could run, I didn't know what to do with him. You know, he was too smart, way too smarter, better dog than I could train, or I was prepared to go distance wise.
So, with all your experience and things like that, and getting dogs over the years, is it better for you to get a puppy than a trained dog? How do you work that into it? Like,
if you're in mushing or getting into sled dogs, it depends on who you got to look on who you're buying from. You know, you got to look at the reputation selling, just like horse. You know, don't look at like free dogs. It's like, don't look at a gift horse in the mouth type of deal, you know. And it's
take
true,
the
but
free dog.
Yeah, it depends on what you're doing. If you're going to be real professional at it, maybe not go on the free guy. I mean, I got a few of my free ones, you know, when you first start, you're like, okay, you know, but now you know. and with that question though, a puppy can be great without good bloodlines. You really gotta go look at both the mom side and the dad side. Then you gotta look down at what their litters have done. If the litter mates are, if there's, you know, the litters from that, and then you kind of look at the parents' track record, because we're not breeding for good bloodlines. We're breeding for the performance of both parents. It's just like a human athlete, you know. Mm-hmm. If we're, you know, and then with that, an older dog is better. But if I had to pick, I'd rather buy a dog from a finishing team that went the Nome and finished the race and spend money on that. And if you're gonna do it, spend the money. Puppies, I'd say get some older dogs first before when you get started, and then go from there.
Okay, yeah.
Good advice. Good advice.
Yeah,
we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
The Buzz will return on KFAR Radio right after this word from our sponsors.
Great deals all week at the Tin and Aught Herb Company. Munchy Mondays with 15% off all edibles. Train Wreck Tuesdays get you $20 six-pack boxes. Don't miss Thirsty Thursdays, 100 milligram hash-aid drinks for just $20. Funky Friday with Bongo half off. How about Shatter Saturdays? Gets you 20% off Frogman and Choice Extracts. Sunday Funday, you'll find Old Deli strains for just $10 a gram. Only at the Tin and Aught Herb Company's all-new retail store. From cultivation to manufacturing to retail. All under one giant 50,000 square foot roof. That's Tin and Aught Herb Company. Open 7 days a week off Wells Street. License number 14467. Marijuana has intoxicating effects and may be habit forming and addictive. Marijuana impairs concentration, coordination, and judgment. Do not operate a vehicle or heavy machinery under its influence. There are health risks associated with consumption of marijuana. For use only by adults 21 and older. Keep out of reach of children. Marijuana should not be used by women who are pregnant or breastfeeding.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
We now return to The Buzz on KFAR Radio.
Hey, welcome back to The Buzz on 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and live at KFARradio.com. We're with Laurel Eklund. Thanks for joining us today, buddy.
Yeah, it's great being here.
Did I say that right?
Yep, I think my name, that's how you say my name. I grew up with everybody getting that thing mixed up and... You know, I almost missed a wrestling meet as a kid because they kept saying Mario. And then some last time, I'm like, oh, some kid has my same last name. My wrestling coach is like, no, they're talking about you. I realized that they threw that out in there.
You look like a wrestler.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I wish I still had that type of cardio back in those days.
Nobody wants to cut weight, though.
Oh, gosh, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was brutal.
It was awful. I did it 1 year for high school, junior year.
Yeah.
158. No.
Yeah, I did 178, and ugh, that was rough, too.
Yeah. No, thanks.
No, thanks. Mm. Yeah. Grown men.
yeah.
So, Laurel, man, we were just talking about on a break, maybe having you back here later on in the year to really talk about what you got going on. Do you have any kind of plans this summer? You got any summer escapades you want to get into? You had mentioned you spent a lot of time growing up the Yukon, mm-hmm. or are you going up north, or what's summertime plan for you?
Well, summer, I'm actually heading south. Here Sunday, I'll be leaving to catch a ferry from Haines to Juneau. I'll be assistant manager on the Mendenhall Glacier. I've worked for the company Alaska Icefield Expeditions for a few years. So I'll take all my dogs and we go to summer camp pretty much.
Very nice.
Oh, and you run them up on the glacier up there.
Yep.
So smart.
It's kind of like their off-season training. I like to say is like them hitting the weight room. They're not really getting the cardio conditioning like we do all season. But this also, you know, where they get a lot of time off breaks, you know, we get a lot of weather delays because of Southeast Alaska. Yeah. And they get helicopters flying up there and it's, hey, get some weather.
Pulling those fat tourists up the hill.
Yeah, and sometimes, fat tourists. I do that. We do that a lot. And you get the joke, oh, I should have had that extra plate of dog, not dog food, the extra plate, the buffet. And yeah, you hear that a lot. That joke, and you just roll your eyes. Yeah.
Dogs aren't going to die on this trip.
No. Yeah, you do. They pull quite a bit. And that's the one thing that you can really tell the real strength of a team. And it's a good one. I got a lot of younger dogs coming up because a lot of my guys are getting old, so I've done some breedings and stuff. So those young dogs are going to learn how to pull hard. You know, that's something, yeah, they pull, but there is a difference. Like, they're not dead around when you're racing. A good race team will only put about 5 pounds of pressure on a line. What a freight team will put, like, way more than that. Oh, really? Generally, a trained dog team could pull about, each dog in that team could pull about 3 times his own body weight. And they work together as a team. But they also got, but then when you race and do like things like Iditarod and stuff like that, you know, you really got almost to do stuff like I do in April, going up north and stuff. You kind of almost got to like detrain them a little bit. They got to learn now to sink in gear, be more patient. You know, they're going from going 50 miles in 5 hours to doing 10 miles in 5 hours, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a little different style of mushing going on there. And
slower, more torque, like you're saying. They're building muscle, not just carrying that inertia and just skating kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. They go from being a Formula One race car to a Ford F-350, you know?
Yeah, or a Peter Belch,
you know? yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're going to spend the summer down in Mendenhall, down in Juneau?
Yep, and then from there we come back. I'll be, you know, probably spend some time in, might spend some time in Eureka, Alaska. Might spend some time up on the Tana of the River, doing some beaver trapping for my dogs for race feed. Doing, you know, we can fish now. We can't, you know, subsistence fishing is closed, but we can fish with a 4-inch net, and we can, like, you know, targeting other fish than just salmon. And being a fisherman, you know, that's one of my pleasures. I hate rod and reel, but I also like, but you know, fishing for the dogs and stuff is something I enjoy. I enjoy setting. We use set nets in eddies, and we're targeting whitefish, sheepfish, or a dead salmon. We're allowed to keep dead salmon, but you let the live ones go so they can hopefully in the future we are back to being able to fish for whatever.
Just a reminder, you're listening to Buzz on 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and live at KFARradio.com.
So just we have a few minutes left, and it's such a big topic to unpack, the fish and just the dog mushing communities, let alone any of the out villages or people who have really, that's their lifeblood.
Yeah.
Have we really seen an impact the last couple of years with just the dog mushing community not having the availability for the fish in the interior?
Oh, definitely. You know, being able to fish for my dogs, being able to have that subsistence and living and doing it off the land, you get a lot of pride in that. Mm-hmm. And not many mushers fish from their dogs, but they buy from guys like myself. I mean, when they started shutting down the commercial part of being on the Yukon, that year before, I bought a commercial permit, you know, and for nets, you know, $3,000. It was only $3,000, but still, it hurt because that was like a way to fall to sell fish and then buy the good kibble and keep the good fish for yourself. And yeah, it hurts because that, you know, fish, you know, at some of the best, especially that Tanana fish, that Yukon fish, where they have so much oil because they're still going, you know, they're way more oily than the ocean spawned fish caught in the ocean.
For sure.
Chitna every year and get those reds, man.
Dude, I love those chitna reds.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that type of salmon. That doesn't go to the dogs. It goes to
my belly.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, I used to fish a lot for my dogs. Man, when I was just starting out, I had no money. You know, I mean, heck, you know, I had really no money. And it's like kind of like finally now I'm starting to have money. That's what I can do. I did it right. You know, there's guys that do it when they, you know, the first 2-3 years, them get into the sport, but they either work for a mentorship or they got the money to throw at it. And growing up with no money, then getting the dogs, which makes you have even less money. You know, fishing saved my ass. Like it made it. No matter what, I knew my dogs were fed. I might not have like -20 in the bank account, but I had you look outside and had a pile of fish, and I was less stress off the back because you're like, okay, at least my dogs are fed. And so, you know, I used to catch up to 2,000 fish: whitefish, sheepfish, pike, and salmon. You know, and you know, and then 1,000 of that probably was. And this is a rough guess, but 1,000 of that was probably roughly freshwater fish, and another 1,000 was salmon going up the Yukon. And we fish right off the bridge, go through our eddies and stuff. We'd fish there till ice up with my dad. Yeah. And so that was, and then, now, you know, I'm just kind of one of the diehards, but you know, outside of the dog mushing world, it's killed a lot of the culture on the Yukon and the Tanana. People used to go out to fish camps. Yeah, that's almost. I mean, I talked to a couple of the old timers and elders in those villages that I knew from growing up, and a lot of them said, you know, that's almost the coffin, nail on the head, coffin wise, to the strong culture, you know. That's almost like the last nail to the coffin. In a sense, there's still a lot of good culture in there, and guys like myself that still got there with a 4-inch net just to catch something and bring their kids out and stuff. But even then, I don't know if I ever have kids or my friends from the villages, if their grandkids are going to be able to see that fish camp culture, even if the fish came back, you know. Mm. That's the biggest thing, is that the fish came back, you know, how many years from now, guys stop going to fish camp in the summertime.
It just kind of disappears too, you know, after a while.
I think I built one of the last fish wheels on the river, and it's not gloating, but I was helping my buddy Marvin Cochrane, who's another dog musher. He's an Athabascan dog sprint musher from Rampart, and I helped them build the fish wheel. And once we got that thing done, they let us fish, but they shut the use of the fish wheel. So literally, I think he's got that thing spun twice.
Oh, no. Oh,
now,
no
for 2 days. So it's tough. Yeah.
No way.
And it took you a week to freaking make it.
I mean, I helped him towards the end, but he did a lot of that building the raft, setting that. I mean, that probably took us 2 weeks of work, but it was great. I had that knowledge, but now I can't use it, you know.
I know, it's just crazy because, like, they'll shut that fishing down, but then they'll allow, you know, commercial fishing.
Yeah.
Saners all over
saners.
The state.
Oh, geez.
You know, just tons of bycatch and everything else.
And then bye-bye to China.
The fish just go somewhere else. Like,
or they target, you know, areas and, you know, units. There's even that commercial, you know, fishing game needs to shut down certain units so they don't have, like, the trawlers and stuff carrying that. I remember talking to an old-timer, Virgil of Santa Smokehouse. He was saying that he's on the board. He's an old hunting guide, one of the original OG hunting guides. You know, he's like 80-something years old. I don't know how he's still kicking. But he's just angry, so he keeps going. He's a tough old bird. But anyways, this happened. He told me this happened before back in the 50s, but it was from trawlers hitting this. He thinks, because the fish, you know, they do conjure up together in areas on the ocean. Mm-hmm. And the ocean, just like our hunting units, is made up into units. And he says he remember telling fishing game back then in the 50s they need to shut that area down. And that will keep from, like, no units in that area. But sadly, you know, that keeps our trawlers might be at bay, but you got other nations, and this ain't harping. You know, it's tough. It's a tough subject to talk about, because I also have some commercial fishing buddies that they feel sorry, but they also, this is their life too.
That's their lifeblood too. Yeah. You know, it's never, you know, it's just such a muddy issue.
It is.
All of it, because it affects everybody, right? It just doesn't affect a few people.
Oh, yeah.
But hey, with just a minute or two left we have, one of the reasons why I wanted to get you back before the season ends is that you've started and are kind of in the works of Skookum Expeditions. You want to just tell us a little bit about what's going on?
Yeah, well, Skookum Expeditions is my kennel name. It's been an on and off thing of working towards it, but and figure out what I want to do with my life. You know, almost 30 now, I'm figuring, oh, that's what I want to do. But so right now we're kind of, you know, I used to do a lot of half-hour tours. I work with other companies doing that, but right now I'm not focusing that for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to work contracting out with other people. My biggest thing is I'm trying to get some stuff going up in the North Slope, the Arctic, where we do some hunts with myself. I know I'd go up there and hunt and spring camp up there, and I had nobody to bring people up. So I kind of want to work on getting to bring people out there, either camping. I'm working with my friend John Bannister on doing some ptarmigan hunts, mm-hmm. bird dog stuff. We're still in the works with that, so
yeah,
hopefully by next 2025 we're getting that going. So
I'm trying to product test that trip.
Oh, hey, come on up.
I want to be stuck behind as a bunch of dogs and get dragged in the middle of nowhere and shoot a bunch of birds. And
yeah.
Oh, man. Sign me up.
Hopefully we can get that going here in next April. But we're working on permits and stuff. So, but, I mean, in general, though, we are doing those more multi-day trips, like this non-hunting trips, which are still fun, still great, still a blast. You know, there's a lot of – you see so much cool country and stuff. But, yeah.
Well, thanks again for joining us, buddy. Good luck with everything this year. It sounds like you got your hands in everything. Well, this has been another episode of The Buzz. Thanks for sharing a small part of your Saturday with us. For more information about Tanner and our company, come see us at our retail at 1200 Wall Street, or find us on Instagram or Facebook or tannerherbcompany.com. Have a great day. Coming up is Health Talk with Dr. Scott Looper.
You've been listening to The Buzz on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at kfarradio.com. Brought to you by the Tanana Herb Company on Well Street. License number 14467. To listen back to this or past episodes, go to the archives page on the KFAR website. This has been a production of Last Frontier Media Active and KFAR Radio.